Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also, the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to the Deco Retro program. I find there's nothing more relaxing than being engrossed in a good book. One I enjoyed recently and found hard to put down was Wild Journeys by Bruce Ansley. Bruce, who is a keen tramper, takes the reader on wild journeys throughout New Zealand, over terrain that is stunningly beautiful but not always easy to access, especially when following in the footsteps of others and their wild journeys of discovery. It's a terrific read with lots of laughs because Bruce Ansley obviously has a great sense of humour. So today I've decided to read an abridged extract from his book when he takes us on a humorously wild journey along Auckland's Queen Street, where many of us have strutted our stuff. But before I read the extract, perhaps some of you will remember a time when the shops in Queen Street used to stay open late, until 9 o'clock I think it was, but only once a week on Friday nights. We would bus into town, meet our friends, do some shopping and have a bite to eat, then head home before everything shut down, leaving Queen Street mostly deserted, except for late-night stragglers hurrying along, a few drunks, and moviegoers who always seem to disperse quickly. I don't remember seeing many homeless people sleeping on the streets then. Things have certainly changed. Now people tend to gravitate to the bars and restaurants in the viaduct, where the water laps quietly to the strains of chatter and sometimes raucous laughter. Bruce Ansley mentioned that he joined the anti-TPPA, Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, protest in Queen Street in 2016. Actually, so did I.
When will you put your hands up and do something? Will you speak out or say nothing? There is so much we have to lose. So if you move like this, take your time, get used to it. There's no good reason or we can't make a change. So get off the fence, it's far too crowded. Take a chance now, scream and shout it. Now's the time to put your hands up.
I pushed my way through the crowd up Queen Street towards Smith & Coy's, always my favourite department store, and joined the protesters by inserting myself between two burly Maori chaps shouting, "Ake, Ake, Ake." Finally, we reached Queen Elizabeth Square, where Jane Kelsey, holding a megaphone, gave a rousing anti-TPPA speech to an enthusiastic crowd amidst clapping, hooting and whistles of approval. After which, having done my bit towards saving the sovereignty of Aotearoa, I staggered home for a cup of tea and a nana nap. So, I will now read that extract, Strutting Stuff, from Bruce Ansley's book Wild Journeys. Queen Street, New Zealand's best known street, has a double life. In one, it is a thoroughfare. Bustles and cars jostle on the roadway, pedestrians on the footpath, shops and tall buildings line its route. In the other, it chucks the suits, climbs into its jeans and screams. It mutates from a city walk to a wild journey. It becomes a stage. It turns into New Zealand's Trafalgar Square, National Mall, Central Park, Place de la Bastille. If you need to say something, protest against anything, even celebrate a win, then off you go down Queen Street. This is the most crowded street in New Zealand, yet there's always room to move on its broad pavements. Sometimes people change places with the traffic, for on Queen Street, nothing stays the same for very long. Pedestrians burst onto the roadway, dodging the mysterious construction choreography that is a constant part of Queen Street Theatre. People in hard hats and high-vis vests are always directing traffic to, well, somewhere else. In the first decade of the new millennium, Queen Street was upgraded and everyone, cars, buses, trucks, pedestrians, was subjected to years of torment. Adding injury to insult, the cost of the upgrade doubled. Queen Street claimed another victim. The work took some of the blame for unseating the mayor, Dick Hubbard. A new mayor, Len Brown, promoted an even bigger project, the Underground City Rail Link. Queen Street choked. Brown went too, but for other reasons. Through it all, Queen Street emerges with panache as a fine piece of Auckland theatre. Now people dance around traffic which runs lights and hops lanes, for on Queen Street, progress depends not so much on driving as creativity. The same applies to its other life. Queen Street's alter ego is in fact a public megaphone, an amphitheatre for popular opinion, New Zealand's Circus Maximus. Sometimes Queen Street has changed our world. In 1981, an anti-union march named Kiwis Care attracted 50,000 people to Queen Street. Flags flew. The national anthem evoked the sanctimony of a test match. The young organiser, Tanya Harris, became an instant celebrity. Trade unions, whose own march along Queen Street attracted just 4,000 marchers and an awful lot of abuse, were excoriated. The wounds never healed. Sometimes Queen Street hasn't changed anything. Some 10,000 people marched on Aotearoa Square in 2001, opposing genetic engineering. Helen Clark's Labour government took no notice, allowing GE experiments to continue. Win or lose, the wild journeys along Queen Street have a life of their own. In 2010, Queen Street accommodated one of the biggest protests in our history. It blocked Queen Street from top to bottom, opposing the newly elected national government's decision to allow mining on conservation land. The government had promised to consult the public, and here on Queen Street were plenty of public to consult. Some said the government backed down as a result, but history has shown they simply made the changes more subtle. Usually, no one dies on Queen Street, although egos and dignity may suffer grievously. It is the place where causes wither or bloom, the stage upon which the citizenry treads the boards. Excellent, you say. The street has a vivid reputation, excitement, public mayhem. I've been on several of these performances, both up and down Queen Street. The first was soon after I moved to Auckland in 2012. Television New Zealand had delivered the chop to its Channel 7, a commercial-free channel strong on the arts. The government had pulled the plug on the channel's funding, and the last vestige of public television broadcasting was to shut down at midnight that night. Given the choice between a remarkably small amount of money and some 1.6 million viewers, the government took the simple view. Cut the viewers loose. The subtext being, they were unlikely to be national voters anyway. The idea was to have a funeral procession along Queen Street in the forlorn hope that it might save the channel. As only a few hundred people turned up, it probably had the opposite effect. As we all marched up the street, it soon became clear that news-wise the focus had shifted. Closing New Zealand's only public broadcasting television channel had taken second place to a large, rich immigrant who called himself Kim.com. Dotcom's famous mansion had been raided by the police not long before, ineptly. Now he saw Channel 7 as a symbol of internet freedom upon which his fortune depended. People who were not interested in internet freedom, still less Channel 7, saw only Kim.com. I was right behind him in both senses. The enemy of my enemy was my friend. Besides, he was a large man. It was a rather cold evening, and he was a mobile shelter belt. We marched past Britomart, disguised as the old chief post office and soon to become, yes, another construction obstacle, as somewhere far below, workers cut through the sediment of centuries to build more underground rail and carry the Queen City a little further into the 20th century, with the 21st still to be tackled. We went past the expensive stores, Dior, Prada, Hugo Boss, Louis Vuitton, Gucci, where mysterious queues sometimes form at some unseen signal, and kept in line by uniformed attendants, are let into the store a few at a time, without unseemly rush. Up the street we went, past the barely discernible bend that shows the course of the Wai Horatu stream, which Queen Street was built along, following what was once a bushy gully. Past Vulcan Lane, enticing faint-hearted protesters to abandon their futile quest for beauty, and instead pop into one of its narrow pubs for a beer. The front lawn sang of Vulcan Lane, of seeing themselves in a cafe window as if they were in colour and everyone else was in black and grey. Now that was reversed. I thought I was in black and grey and everyone else was in colour. It was quite clear that Channel 7 was to go out with a whimper rather than a bang. We passed the 1865 Bank of New Zealand building, which is the only survivor of Queen Street's mid-19th century roots. Now, in true Auckland fashion, just a silly facade for the high-rise now occupying the site. I felt a bit of a silly facade myself. When you start checking the architecture, you might say you've lost momentum. When you investigate its history, likewise. This was a timid affair. A century before, people knew how to stage a decent protest. In 1913, hundreds of strikers, shouting and throwing stones, tried to prevent ships being loaded on the wharves. Large numbers of armed and mounted strikebreakers, supported by hundreds of police and a naval warship, were put on duty at the Auckland docks to protect strikebreakers or scabs. The Weekly News reported that as the clock struck 5 a.m. on the 10th of November, every unit in the defence of the waterfront, comprising fully 1,000 irregulars and regular police, was stationed in the position selected for it. As the day advanced, a very angry crowd of strikers and their sympathisers congregated in Little Queen Street, which was guarded by farmers from Cambridge. And towards 10 o'clock, it looked as if there would be trouble. The mass of excited men forced itself nearer to the double row of mounted countrymen and shouted the most offensive epithets in its vocabulary, varying the theme occasionally with a chorus of howls and hoots. The Cambridge farmers sat quiet, calm and outwardly unmoved, but their batons never left their hands, and their gaze was fixed very steadily on the seething, raging crowd in front. "We don't want to start fighting," said the commander of the troop, when a particularly vile invective was flung at them. We're here to protect our port and not to fight. Violence broke out all over the place, of course, but the strikers lost. This day, in 2012, a century later, my body may have been intact, but my head was so bored it might even have welcomed a knock from a cocky stick. Where was the spirit of, say, 1932, when 15,000 angry unemployed marched up to a town hall meeting, fought police, and enraged when one of their leaders was struck down with a police baton as he rose to plead for calm, ricocheted down Queen Street, smashing shop windows? They took one chemist shop's entire stock of contraceptives and vandalized all the wax dummies in a department store. That's picturesque looting. Well, many of those people lost their livelihoods and their pride and their future. We were only losing an arts channel. On the other hand, a mere power cut was enough to set off a riot at a concert in Queen Street's Ayrtia Square in December 1984. The concert, thank God it's over, celebrated the end of the academic year. But when the power went off and the music stopped and people started throwing bottles, the riot police arrived. Damage, in the end, came to more than $1 million, and everyone went home that night with a common thought. Thank God it's over. The Queen Street protest against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, TPPA, in 2016 showed more fire. Thousands of us turned up at Ayrtia Square and marched down the street, shutting down central Auckland, according to some reports. We felt the proposed agreement didn't just stink, it reeked to high heaven. John Key, the Prime Minister, smelled only roses. Around the corner, choosing the casino for his own stage, he signed the agreement with a flourish. Outside, protesters capered and howled. This was more like it. I marched sedately behind a group of Maori who believed their sovereignty was about to be signed over to the Las Vegas Round Table or Philip Morris. They thought they stood a much better chance with Queen Victoria's descendants. We all argued that banks would rule the world, that multinationals would roll right over us, and that the environment would be ruined, as if the TPPA would make any of that worse. We shouted so loudly that even John Key might have heard us above the clinking of glasses and chinking of pokies. He emerged from among the high rollers to declare that Aucklanders were pretty disappointed and a bit confused by the protest, that we were left-wing renter protesters, and that anyway, there were only a few thousand of us. The media reckoned there were 10,000. The organisers guessed more like 15,000. Academics argue that big street protests are effective, not so much for their cause, but for the way they activate the participants politically. They inspire political movement. Later that year, Key quit as Prime Minister. Did he detect a flutter in the chorus, a tick in the corner of the nation's smile? But in the end, the TPPA was scuppered, not by the left in Queen Street, but by the right in the United States, in the form of its new president, Donald Trump. We'll finish now with that Herb song, French Letter. Enjoyed our program today? Listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Moderne. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.